Okay, both sides. I want to share with you, it was my father's yard site, my father's house yard site tomorrow night, on Thursday. I don't think I have to apologize, but I do want to share with you just a couple stories, a couple ideas of what it was about, a couple Chazal related to it, just for the sake of, you know, Chazal say, I made this shot up on my own, but I think Pshat is Chazal say that Misa Sadikim Mechaper. Right? Death of Tzaddik was Mechaper. The question is why? Why? Because they died as a Mechapar. Okay, you take it away from the world. It could be got a Pshat. But I think at least one possible Pshat is, and I think it's true whether it's Pshat or not, I think Pshat is because when someone goes away from the world, so people go to the Hesped, you go to the Levaya, you talk about him, you think about him. Megel inspires people, therefore, of course, people do Tshuva, and therefore there's Megel, there's Kapar. So even if I share with you a lot of different stories, maybe not too many Chazal, it's not a waste of time. Well, Chavar, it should be a schutz for all of us, a schutz for my father's neshama, and just everyone should hopefully benefit, be inspired. Because, whether it's my father or not, there's a lot to be inspired by. Okay, so hope my thoughts are not all 100% in order, so please, you mocha me if I'm a little, they say in Yiddish, tefloigen, you know, jumping around here and there. I didn't have too much time to prepare exactly what I wanted to say in the proper order, so I apologize in advance, but I hope you bear with me. Took some notes over here, so I shouldn't forget certain things, but I want to start with a little Chazal Rabosai, right? which to a certain degree highlights, I think, my father's success. And, you know, my father grew up in, he was born in Milwaukee, basically grew up in Rockford, Illinois. Anybody ever hear of Rockford, Illinois? Probably not. Maybe one or two of you guys. Maybe I said it before, right? But Rockford, Illinois is a little town. I think it's 87 miles northwest of Chicago. We used to go there a lot as children. And that's where he was born. That's where he grew up. Rockford, Illinois was a place that was now there's probably not one from Jew in the place. That's my guess. I have no idea, but there's probably not one from Jew in the place. There used to be, when I was a kid, there used to be a lot of Jews there, but I don't think there was a minyan of Shomer Shabbos. In my father's time, there were more Jews. You know, in those days when people came from Europe, they used to come and go to any place they had some kind of connection. A cousin brought them in, someone related, an uncle and aunt, to sign for them, guaranteed they wouldn't be a burden on the kal, in the country. Therefore, so Rockford, Illinois wasn't a Makom Torah, I wouldn't call it a Yiddish shtut, but it was some place where there were Jews. So I think there was no yeshiva katana, there was no Torah Semes, there was no Tiferes Moshe, wherever you guys went, there was a public school, and there was some Talmud Torah in the afternoon. That's what my father had. He learned basic, reading Chumash. I don't know. He learned some things there. Not to knock it, but it wasn't a yeshiva. And before I get to the Chazal, but just a little background. So I think he was about 12 or 13 years old. I think, I'm not sure. He comes home one day, it's just part of the progress, I think you might know the story. Comes home one day, comes and tells his mother, he asks his mother, can I go? There's a party tomorrow night. I don't know if it was Friday night or Saturday, I'm not sure exactly when. It could be it was Friday night, I'm not sure. There's a party Friday night, can I go to the party? He says, what kind of party? He says, well, Mary Jane, probably the right, I think it's the right name, Mary Jane is having a birthday party, we're all invited. I didn't say, this was on Thursday. They were talking on Thursday. My grandmother was also a very special lady. And so she, right away, her ears perked up. She heard Mary Jane. It wasn't a very Yiddish name, to say the least. I don't know about nowadays. I assume the same nowadays. But it wasn't a very Yiddish name. And she realized that this Mary Jane is not a very Jewish girl. Probably 12, 13, whatever it was. She turns to my grandfather, her husband, says, his name was Yaakov Yechiel. She called him Jake. She says, Jake, tomorrow we're going to Chicago. We're taking Sammy, that was my father's name, and that's what it's called. Taking Samuel, I think they called him Samuel, they called him Sammy. We're taking Sammy to Chicago. He's out of here. He can't stay in Rockford, Illinois anymore. He wants to come to stay Jewish. Can't stay in Rockford anymore. They took him. I don't think he was so excited about it. He has all his friends, all his, maybe a lot of Mary Janes around. I don't know exactly. I can't speak for that. But he wasn't excited to go. He was a young kid, 12, 13, I don't know how, it was about that age. He went to Chicago. That was the beginning of his, I guess, real chinuch, and I'll tell you more about it later. But just, I want to share with one chazal, which I think is a little, which is, I heard this chazal, I heard this shmooze from my father a couple times, I think. In fact, there's two shmuz in the same Sfarno, but I'll just share one of them, which I think is more relevant. Maybe you heard it before, I don't know. The pasuk in Vayetzei talks about how when Yaakov was you know, he had already left Yitzchak, he was 14 years Shem Aver. Vayetzei Yaakov Ber Shava, Yacharana, he said that 14 years. And he goes to Makam Mikdash, Vayikas Yaakov Bishnaso, Yaakov, he fell asleep there, wakes up. Vayomer Ochein Yesh Hashem Makam Hazeh, behold, here's Hashem in this place. I was not aware of it. I didn't know. So Rashi says just simply, if I would have known, I wouldn't have slept here. It's a very holy place. So it's not right to sleep here. Very nice, simple pshat. The Sfarno says something a little different. If I would have known, I would have prepared myself in a vua. I see, it's a very special place. You know, we had this dream, so he knew that he just had an exciting dream. He doesn't get there. It's Yisrael and Abanim and the Kai Yisrael, whatever it was, all the different brachas. He got at that point. So he saw it was a very special place, a makam muchan for nevuah, a place set up for nevuah. So maybe if I would have known that this before I went to sleep, I would have prepared myself for nevuah. I can't just walk into a place and expect nevuah. You know, you have to be rife and you have to prepare yourself, be in the proper frame of mind, proper background. Lochein osis, I didn't do it. That's his furno. My father Zatzal said that think about it. As we mentioned, Yaakov just came back. He finished 14 years in Shem Aver. Yaakov was the Bechir Shab Avos, Chazal says. He was the most prominent, the most the chosen of the Avos. That's what Yaakov was. Very special, not just a special tzaddik, but a special one of the Avos of our nation. And he just finished learning 14 years. And probably more crocs, I can't think of right now, but how much more could Yaakov Avinu done to prepare himself? What was lacking? You know, he went to sleep, and all the rocks ran around. They wanted to get him. They had to combine the one rock, right? Nisim were happening left and right because of who Yaakov was. So his whole state of mind, you know, I think Chazal said, I forgot where it is, someplace it says Chazal, that Bechal, he was always thinking and learning. He was always talking in different Torah. He wasn't walking around thinking about the baseball game or thinking about the Super Bowl. You know, he wasn't into all that kind of stuff. He was always communicating with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was involved with Hashem. So if I wouldn't know that, this is Makam Kadosh, she would have, I would have prepared myself. What do you want to do? You want to reach higher my brain? Okay, you can always higher my brain. What would I have done special? He was always working on himself. He would have done something special. How would the shayach for a person like that? I mean, Yaakov is Madrega to do something more special, to go ahead and be roif and be in a proper frame of mind for nevuah. So my father said, pshat was because, you see, Zetmer the Fun, famous Sabbatka, Schavetz Chaim, Zetmer the Fun, that and the chor of pshat is because when a person focuses on a certain goal, it's one of the person steiging is trying to become better and better. But if you have a more specific goal in mind and you're focusing, you're trying to, you know, I might get nevuah tomorrow, tonight. I'm going to get nevuah. There's something special he's focusing on. As motivated as he is before, in general, you know, he wants to become bigger gadol, bigger talmud chacham, bigger eved Hashem, bigger shalom. You know, when you focus nachamal on something special, it gives you special added willpower, added motivation, added inspiration. You push yourself a little harder, you become a different person. That's how important. So as great as a person is, number one, it's shayach for a person to be more motivated. And how do you become more motivated? By going ahead and focusing on specific goals. So the goal over here was, you know, so makam kadosh, I have to prepare myself. There's nevuah coming, potential coming forth over here. So that's how a person should see himself. When a person can go ahead, and let's say, guy, you know, I want to finish the Masechta. You know, not just I want to become a Talmud, learn more. I want to learn a lot about Gemara. I want to finish the Masechta. I want to get pshat in the Marshot today. Whatever specific focus is will increase a person's inspiration and motivation and desire to accomplish. That's just a simple tachbua, right? You hear? Simple tachbula, right? If a guy wants to, give the vibe tonight. I have to work hard on that. I just look out, put some things together. There's a goal over there, a specific goal. So the great Yaakov Avinu, who can't imagine how he can be more motivated after 14 years and being a Bechir Shav Avos and being always in communication with Kodesh Baruch Hu, he can be more motivated and by focusing on a goal. If I would have known, I would have focused and tried to become a little more special, more prepared for nevuah, because it's the place for nevuah. That's the shmooze. I think that was the one probably definition of my father. He was someone who was so motivated. He was like You know, people used to joke around and say that he never learned how to walk. He used to always walk around very fast. Not walk, I'm saying, but he used to always run to do things, whether it's mitzvahs, whether it's run to the Beis Medrash, run to the yeshiva. I just remembered my brother, David, just told over one time, he said he had to stay with my father once. My father used to always get stern with different people, grab someone here, not the big adult, but, you know, regular guy from the yeshiva. He used to obviously ask his children to learn with him. They made up a seder a certain time to learn, I think, before davening in the yeshiva. And the first day they walk out of the house together to go to the yeshiva, we lived about 4 blocks from the yeshiva. It was about a 5-minute walk, 6-minute walk, something like that. My father said, okay, let's run. My brother, you know, he's with Thomas 6 o'clock in the morning. He was probably 18, 17 years old. Daddy, why are we running? Like, you know, we'll get this. No, there's no one chasing us. I don't know where are you going? We'll get there 2 minutes later. No, you have to run. You know, because he was always trying to do things in it with his resource and alacrity to accomplish more. But I think it was because he had that goal of being a bigger Eved Hashem, of being doing Ratzon Hashem, being Marpes Torah, whatever the goal is. There's a lot of different goals he had. But there was a tremendous focus on them. When a person has a big focus on his goal, that he's focusing, he's constantly chazering the goal, and he has, I guess, he called Musa B'Spiral Seder about it. You know, I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do that. He was a motivated person because he had such clear vision of what his job in life was, what his mission in life was. So that's important. Both. I think that in a nutshell is my guess. As far as I can't really say, but I guess in a nutshell, that was my father's success because he was so motivated. He had a crystal clear picture of what he wants to accomplish. You know, whatever it was, I want to become an Eved Hashem. I want to develop my midos. I want to become a Marbish Torah. I want to become a good Magid Shir. I want to say Pshat Nemarshal. Whatever it might be, every single aspect of his life, every day, whatever it was. A lot of other things also. Maybe we'll get to that later, but. But that's what he wanted. Therefore, when a person has a rut and a goal like that, he can accomplish tremendous amounts of both sides. It wasn't just my father. It could be anybody here who has goals and has focus and a goal. What am I doing here? What am I doing in this world in general? What am I doing in yeshiva? What am I doing today? All these things are goals a person has to have. And it makes a big difference. My father, I mentioned a lot of the stuff I mentioned at the Levaya. So if you heard the Levaya, I apologize for repeating it, but I think it's about a chazer. My father came to yeshiva first in 1945, right? He first came to, I think, he was in Chicago for a while, as we mentioned earlier. Went to Skokie for a little while. I'll get back to that also soon. And he came to yeshiva. He went to high school there. And he went to some, there were two Weinreb brothers, a bunch of Chavos Chaim guys that he went to Chicago for a while to be in the yeshiva there in Skokie, I think to avoid the draft. The draft was very strong in New York, but they were able to sit and learn without being drafted in Chicago. So a lot of people went to the smaller towns. I mean, New York was a heavy-duty place for drafting. I don't know exactly. There was this Al and Sam Weinreb, where they were mashpia my father to go to New York, go to Tor Vadas, you know, go to the big town, you know. And he went. So I think he was there for 1 year. Tor Vadas went to 1 year high school. And somehow there were some, I think, the London Brothers. You heard of the London Brothers? Some of you guys, right? The London Brothers, also big Bali Makarev, big... Chavos Chaim graduates and very much involved with Kirov all the time. They had the yeshivas, I think, in Manhattan all the time. You know, Chaim Friedman, he's a grand, Chaim Friedman, who was, I don't know if you guys know him, the two Friedman boys. Chaim Friedman's one of them, the other one. Avram and Chaim's the older one, right? Chaim's the older one who was here a couple years before that. They were grandchildren of one of the London brothers. But they convinced my father to come to visit Chavos Chaim down the block. They were a block or two away from each other in Williamsburg. They came, he said, come for Shal Shudas, and come for Shmuz, and come for Shir. My father got to like the back and forth, and so he eventually went over to Chavos Chaim. I guess one of the main things, as Rebbe say, that I think what my father grew tremendously was from he was Davuk, literally Davuk to his Rebbe, to the Rishiva Zatzal. He was Mamesh, like a Talmud. You know, whatever the Rishiva would say, he would always say, what would the Rishiva say about this? That was his life. His I don't want to use the word idol. That's not an appropriate word. But his role model in what his goal, as I mentioned before, was to follow the Rishiva's, you know, Das Torah, to follow his mahalach, which he forged for the Bnei Yeshiva. It was always so close. Like I always remember, it was such a I guess you might say a funny thing. My father was in the yeshiva. Like I say, he was there from 1945 till. To was Niftan in 1986. He was there 71 years. Okay, long time in the yeshiva. Now, how many years are you here already? Right, not that long. Right, he was there for 71 years. He never left the yeshiva. He was always there the whole time. And you can imagine how many cycles is that? What is that? About 12 cycles, right? 12 and change, right? Now, aside from the Shurim, he must have heard a million times, but the Shemuzin, and the Rishiv used to always repeat Shemuzin, especially on Shabbos. But it was always, no matter what, every time my father had a Shemuz, you know, somebody was okay, it was well, it could be that Shemuz, he was there. The Rishiv used to give the Shemuz, that's right over here, here's the Bima, there's the guys, back in Forest Hills, Queens, the Bima was like this in the middle, and my father always sat right over here, right, there's a table over here, my father sat, he was always like, you always saw him like this. So I don't know exactly, but something like this, you know, listening to the Shmooz. As if it's the first time I ever heard in his life. Like he probably heard every single Shmooz a dozen times. Now you can imagine, I would probably fall asleep if I heard it a dozen times, right? But he looked to hear it, he listened to it as if it was the first time. It didn't make a difference how many times, and for a while, I mean, it could be he did it for me sometimes. I think in our stroll there, we had a little Seder after Shalosh Shuddah Shmooz. We used to run upstairs to his shirum after Marav Shalosh Shuddah. He said, let's go over the Rashi Prakim, spend 5 minutes, not more than 5 minutes, on the Shmooz. Let's chazer it over the Shmooz, write down the Rashi Prakim, whatever, take notes, you know. He probably did it for me more than for him, I guess. I don't know, I'm not sure. But he had copious notes, copious cards. Now in the house, they used to live in Queens, in their house, so there's like file cabinets, literally file cabinets of notes, of cards, of tapes, of CDs, of newspaper clippings, all this stuff. But everything was written down, filed away in cabinets, you know, because he was a thorough. He had the goals. He wanted to know. He wanted to learn. So I say, even the Rashi Shmuzin, which he heard 27 times, he heard a couple dozen times, who knows, but as if he never heard it. That's what it looked like. He was sitting there in that position all the time, right over there. He was listening, whether it was a shir, whether it was a shmooze, it didn't make a difference, because he had a love of learning, a love of his Rebbe to get, you know, a deeper insight. I think I mentioned to the Chevra recently, I think Reb Chaim Voloshin always says that, you know, it's always in to make chedushim. And it's the beginning to make the mechadish chedushim Torah. I just happened to learn on a side, I'm getting a little sidetracked here, but I was learning some stuff about what to do on a yard site. So it said that this is a chassidish sefer. It wasn't my father's sefer, but the sefer said, it's always an in to make chedushim, especially on someone's yard site. You make chedushim, mochaved, I guess, as chus for the nifter, that's like special. You know, you make chedushim. So Rabbi Chaim Voloshin used to always say that, Chaim Voloshin always said that, what's pshat a chiddush? A new deher, a deeper insight to the same thing. You knew the halacha before, you knew the pshat toses, but you think it over again, you get a deeper clarity, more clarity, deeper insight. That's called a chiddush. Yotze hilchas chiddush with a deeper insight, right? That's pshat. That's why my father, it wasn't just chazara to remember it. It was chazara. It was listen to it again to understand, to appreciate, to be able to apply it better, to live it, to feel it. Right? That's the chazara I told the other guys with Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, right? A person goes ahead and knows he's going to die. He knows he can't take it with him, right? The shmuz we said the other night at Shalosh Shuddah. And the Zohar, I think we said, says that Reb Chaim quotes Zohar that a person knows that he's going to die. He knows he's not can't take it with him. But that's the seichel, not the rev. The rev doesn't feel it, doesn't live like that. So you have to absorb whatever we believe. We have to absorb into our pneumius. And that's what you get from hearing it again and again and again, having deeper akar, deeper perspective, deeper insight. That's what it was for. So he sat there every time the shmooz, listening with the same enthusiasm as the guy first year base medrash. The Rishiv used to always talk about there's two types of Talmidim. There's a Talmid Bershus HaRav and a Talmid B'siyata D'Rav. Maybe you know what that means? Talmid Bershus HaRav means a Talmid who listens carefully. He knows exactly what the Rebbe said. Okay? But he's almost like a parrot. He knows exactly what his Rebbe said. He knows all the different Ashkafas the Rebbe told him. But he just, you know, he can say it over. He memorizes, so to speak. He has the basic Havana. But that's it. There's a Talmud B'siyata D'Rav, means he's not a carbon copy, or he's not someone who can spit forth all the hashgafas he heard from his Rebbe, but rather he absorbed it, he understood it, and he can apply it to be Madam Milson Milson. There's a Talmud B'shus D'Rav, just can, you know, if same thing happened, he can figure out what the psak is. Well, let's say something different happened, different story, different application. You have to apply Madam Milson Milson. That's already a different story. You can't do that. So the Rishivis always say he doesn't want Talmidim that are Bishus HaRav. That's just a parrot. That's just a clone. That's not. You have to be your own Gav. You have to be your own person. You have to be your own Bal Seichel and take what your Rebbe says, absorb it, digest it, and in a good way, spit it back. Okay? So my father was someone who used to always, used to listen carefully. I could tell you millions of times, 10, 15 times over. But then he was ready to attack. He used to always attack. Can I use the word viciously? I think so. He attacked viciously to Rashiva. What do you mean? What about this? What about this? What about that? He never accepted. Okay, yeah, Rabbi, I got it. Yeah, you said yes. Yes, 100%. Yes, we got it. No, no. He said, what do you mean? What the Rashiva said a different time this. He said this, said this. Now it's with the Chazal over here and the Gemara over here. Whether it's Tosis, Peshur, or Sepurna, or Ramban, doesn't make a difference, Rabbi Osai. That's a Talmud B'siyata D'Rav, a Talmud with the help, the assistance of the Rav, that the Rav trained me, he gave me his Das Torah, but I applied it, I absorbed it, and I have a good understanding of it, and therefore I can go ahead and apply it to other situations. That's a Talmud B'siyata D'Rav, that's the goal. Always to understand, to challenge, to make sure it makes sense, and then you can take it to someplace else. Again, I'm sorry for the lack of order at both sides. My grandparents on my father's side, both sides, but my grandparents on my father's side, Baruch Hashem had a very, very successful meatpacking company. Schlachta, you know, Schlachta is a slaughterhouse where they shecht cows, right? They used to, I think it might have been the biggest kosher in the Midwest. It was very, 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 very successful. And Baruch Hashem, they were comfortable. And my parents got married. My father was in Kohl for, I think it was about 6 or 7 years. And then, that was till 1959. And Rabbi Sharmig then left the yeshiva, okay, went on his own. And I think that year my father was trying out, before that, my father was trying for different shtelas. He was trying to get a, want to become, he didn't know what, there were no jobs in those days, not too many jobs. So wherever you found it, I want to do this. You know, you can't say, I want to do this. You do what's around. So he told us he went for a couple of prubbis to be a rav in a shul. I think he went in Woodside or Sunnyside in New York area over there. And then Rav Shammer left, so Rashiv approached my father, would you like to take over his job and be the mashgiach? That's fine. So until that time, when my father was in Kollel, so my grandparents on both sides supported them totally. They never took a penny from the Kollel. They didn't need it. You know, we don't need the yeshiva support. They never took a penny from the Kollel. And the parents supported them. My father got this great job, right? New mashgiach in the yeshiva. What did he do? He called the Rashiv up and told Rebbe. He says, he called his parents up. He says, Daddy, Mom, whatever it was, Daddy, Mommy, he says, thank you very much for all the support all the years until now, but I have a job now. You don't have to go ahead and support me anymore, you know. I don't have to be a burden on you. I mean, Baruch Hashem, I think they were comfortable, but it wasn't a big thing. But the Maisa, he took only when he needed, so he never took from the yeshiva initially. He took from his parents, that was preferable. But afterwards, he got a job, still figure so. You know, why should I treat my parents? What happened? Excuse me. What happened 2 weeks later? My grandparents' shachtos was burned to the ground. No insurance, out of business. Everything went down the tubes, basically almost everything. And after that, they were old. They were old already. They weren't so young at that. They weren't so old, but they were, I think, in the 60s, I guess. I don't know, in the 65, 70, I don't recall. I have to figure out exactly. But when that happened, so after, you know, they weren't supporting my father anymore, my parents, so the whole shachtos was burned. I think it's some competitor burnt the thing to the ground. They had no major parnasa. So they tell the famous story about, I think it was the Telzer Rav. You guys probably heard the famous story where Telzer Rav was learning by his shver, him and his wife learning by shver for many years, and every once in a while, every year or two, I think the Telzer Rav, or the wife, I think it was, wanted to, let's go out, let's become a Rav, do something on your own, don't just sit and be supported by my father. And then her parents said, no, I want to keep you, stay around, I want you around the house, it's a big schus for us, whatever, to stay here, I want to support you. I think by the third time, when the daughter and the son-in-law made the request to go out, so okay, so the parents, okay, listen, we can't hold him back, he's right, he's not to go out, let him go out, then be a rav someplace. I think he had offered for Stella, I don't recall exactly. So they packed up, the story was they packed up, started and left. It was a mile or two away out of the house. The wagons all packed with all the belongings, and they finally hear some kind of a guy on a horse racing after them. Wait, come back. What happened? They found out that the shver had a heart attack and passed away then. And the famous line they say about the story is what? Who was supporting who? You know, you think that the parents were supporting the kids learning was supporting the parents, and that's what. That's my father's story. You know, my father's learning and my parents there, involved in the yeshiva, that when the kol was in effect supporting, that was a schus that my grandparents had to have a successful business. So it's, you can't underestimate both the koach of what it means to support Torah, support children, support yeshivas, whatever it might be. But contrary to my parents' belief or prediction, I guess, like they thought, that's it. We don't need the parents' money anymore. The checks were not coming. There were no checks in the yeshiva many times. It wasn't coming in. You know, on paper, he had a nice salary. Not nice, but he had some kind of decent salary, but there was nothing. It wasn't coming. My mother used to always tell me that there were times, I think it was the early 60s, you know, after they got the job, that times that there was a knock on the door, and she couldn't answer the door because she was afraid it was Con Ed, the FPL, the electric company of the city, coming to shut off the electricity because they didn't pay the bills in whatever month, whatever it was. So it wasn't easy. But in spite of that, Rav Elsaib, my parents never, obviously it was hard, they weren't looking forward to let's have no money, let's run away from everybody, but it was never reflected in my parents' attitude. I just saw, I'll share with you, someone said over B'Shem the Roshiva a couple interesting points. It's no gear this. You know, they asked the Roshiva one time, you know, how come many Gedolim, many Roshivas who came from Europe at the turn of the century, you know, early 1900s, there were big Gedolim, big Tzaddikim. Well, Lamaisa, their kids, their children became conservative rabbis. They didn't stay, you know, true to the Torah. They were rabbis in conservative shuls. What happened? How come so many of them went off, so to speak? So she returned them with a smile and said to him, he says, you should know, because there was tremendous hardship in these families, maybe it's parnas or whatever it was, and they weren't happy people, these, I guess, big tamei chachamim, but they were missing that. And when the kids saw that, you know, it's such an unhappy and not a good life, they said, listen, we want greener pastures. They went off and they went out. They went to conservative. They wanted to have a better life. The Roshiva said, but me? He says, be the Roshiva. Roshiva was talking, he says, I only saw happiness in my parents. Reb David, right? He said, my parents had nothing. There was nothing in the fridge sometimes. They didn't penny for to make yontiv till the last day, till our Pesach, famous story that there was nothing there till someone came to do Pinya Ben, and they got five shkolim. The Reb David turned to his Rebbe and says, here, go make Pesach, you know, go buy some food. But there was nothing, they had nothing besides all the terrible tears of Machokas and the people out to get him and terrible stories. But I never saw my father be down, be depressed, be downtrodden, and feel, it's too much. That's famous Ramosha. We said Ramosha used to say that the problem, the reason why we lost that generation, or a lot of the generation was lost, is because everyone used to say it's schwer zu sein a Yid. You guys know Yiddish, that Yiddish, right? It's a schwer, it's hard to be a Jew. That was the saying back in the 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and it was hard. It was definitely hard. It wasn't a lie. But it was a different perspective. You know, the Roshiva's atzal thought in his father, and therefore the Roshiva was emerged different than he said, listen, there's happiness, there's a mission, there's a focus, there's what to be excited about in spite of the poverty, in spite of the lack of anything. But they were happy. So he was encouraged, you know, to follow in their footsteps. I saw that my parents also, no matter what, there was hardships, there was financial hardships in those days. Of course, things were better later on, but in those days it was mamish. The Roshiva had no money. Worse than we are now, right? There were no steaks in those days, no pizza, nothing, right? But they were still. I always saw. I grew up in a family. My parents were always, you know, full of simcha. I just share with you also. I just related, not exactly, but I saw that. When I heard the stories, I heard two other ones also. But Mershiva, it was Member Dan Ho was very sick one time. I was in the hospital. I don't know who it was. Member Dan Ho was very sick. And when the Roshiva heard about it, he said over to himself four, five, six times in a row, it's all for the best, it's all for the best, it's all for the best. And that's what he said when he heard about this, that this member of the Anhola was in the hospital. So the Rebbeson who heard this said over to the people there, said, you know, he says, the reason why the Roshiva can survive is because in spite of all his hardships and challenges and running the Yeshiva by himself, especially in those days, is because that's what he always focuses on. He always machazik himself, reminds himself, it's all for the best, all for the best, all for the best. That's It's like you hear something terrible happens, and right away the natural reaction is, oh yeah, what do I need this for? What's Hashem doing to me? And what am I going to do? Like, yeah, pakert, all for the best. And a related story is that someone asked him in a joking way one time. He says, his Rebbe, he says, Rosh Yeshiva had some kind of fever or some kind of cold. He couldn't go to Yeshiva that day, those couple of days. So the Talmud asked the Rosh Yeshiva, he says, Rebbe, you know, how do you have time to put a cold into your schedule? Like, you're so busy, there's no time for a cold to interfere with your work. How do you put that cold into your schedule? A little humorous. So Rosh Yeshiva said, and this is Mamash Rabosai, don't forget these words. Rosh Yeshiva said, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt that he wanted, it was bashert, that I should get a cold, and that's what he wants me to have, I'm going to find time to put it in my schedule. That's what I'm supposed to be doing now. I'm supposed to have a cold now. That's charibo. That's how you take care of all challenges. All your challenges become so much easier. You know, you walk into shir and you can't figure out what the Rebbe's talking about. It's too crazy. It's too hard. I can't figure it out. I'm too mixed up. I have a headache. And I'm tired as that, you know. Obviously, if it wasn't your negligence, obviously you can't excuse everything if it's your own fault. But assuming you didn't do anything wrong per se. So pshat is, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants now. He wants me to be faced with a challenge that I don't know what he's talking about. Hashem gave me a headache. He wants me to have a headache now. So I have to live with that, and that's part of my situation. It's part of, fits into my schedule, fits into my whole environment. That's what we're supposed to have. You know, someone calls up, and like I told you guys before, I told you guys in my shir that we had a big problem with money today. We needed to have to borrow a lot of money for the, you know, and all of a sudden, no, I didn't tell you guys yet. No, I'm sorry, I didn't tell you guys. No, I didn't tell you. I'm sorry. I guess I'm sorry to tell you now, right? It's not fair otherwise. No, we have to, today, Mamish today, we have to borrow. I had a meeting right before Shir with Moshe Bernstein. We have to borrow, I think it was, what did I say?
150,000.
Yeah, I'm trying to get different numbers. I think it was about $170,000, right? $170,000 we have to borrow for tomorrow, for Friday's payroll. We were short, there's no money, so what are we going to do? So we figured if it ain't says, we'll get some credit cards and take 20 from here and go to this person. There's different accounts, there's different principals, and then one or two balabatim and whatever. We figured a cheshbon to put together $170,000, okay? That was at 12:15, okay, before Shir. That's what you guys heard, right? Okay. The rest of the story is, right, that at 1:30, after lunch, I walk in my office. I think about 5 minutes later, Mr. Gidelson walks in. And she says, well, okay, I think I was supposed to sign a check, one of those checks to transfer from a temporary account, whatever, to borrow the money. And she looks on the screen on the video. There's a video screen in my office. So she sees, oh, there's the mail truck is here. She says, maybe there'll be something in the mail. Who knows? This is what happened today. Not yesterday. Not last year. Not 10 years ago. So she goes out to the front thing, meets the mailman, whatever. She comes back. I went, Naaman, you'll never believe it. Okay. So she says, she opened the front office, she says there's a check there from I think it was Homeland Security, from the government, meant for security, you know, so a check for $142,000, okay? And obviously it's not new money for us, it was meant for, you know, for these gates and other things, so we're just borrowing it, but, you know, the money came in, 142, and about 20 minutes later I get another phone call from a certain balabas who I was trying to get money from, that he owed a certain pledge. Another $50,000 came in from those two, 50 and 142. So I said to myself, we have too much money. You know, it's 192, it's not 142. What about, it's not 170, 170, whatever it was, about $10,000. So we'll find what to spend it on. It's not a problem. We'll find what to spend it on, Rabbi Osei. Rabbi Osei, what? He said steaks, though. He said steaks? Can't hear.
Steaks tomorrow.
Right, steaks tomorrow. So the Maestro both said, but Rabbi Osei, if you're short on money, that's what Hashem wants to be in your schedule today, okay? If you have a headache today, Hashem wants that to be part of your schedule today. That was the Roshiva's, it's not the Roshiva. The Roshiva just, you know, put it into action and brought it to life and acted his whole life that way. It was in the heart, not just in the brain. It was not up here, it was down here, right? Like the Zohar says, right? It has to be down here, in the heart. Well, Lamaisa, that's the story about the Roshiva. That's not my father, but that's my father's one, the Roshiva. And I saw nothing faze my father in that regard. Always happy, satisfied with his lot. That's his challenge, do the best you can. Oh boy, it's late. I'll tell you an interesting story about in this area. You know, so Rosh, my father, you know, when he decided to, I don't know if it was by coal, I think it was, yeah, he was, right, he was still a bacher at that point. And my grandparents at that time had a very successful business. Well, my father was the only one in the family who was able, whatever, to go ahead physically or potentially able to, he had the kolchos and ability to take over the business. My father was running the yeshiva full-time. I think it was 20, 21. I don't know exactly what year exactly it was. And my grandmother, Zichrona Livracha, approached my father, says, listen, you're learning, but after we want you to go into the business, take it over. It's the good parnasa. My father didn't want to take it over. He wanted to be involved in the learning. So at that time, they went for some reason. I think there was a draft issue. They spent the Shabbos. They had to go to Waterbury, Connecticut. Okay, my grandmother and my father went to spend the Shabbos in Waterbury, Connecticut. And because they had to be there near the draft, I don't know exactly why, but it was around that place. And Rabbi Zalki Gurtz Zatzal, who you hopefully you heard of, he was a big, big Talmud Chacham, big speaker, he was a rav in the shul there. They stayed at his house for Shabbos. So over Shabbos, my grandmother went over to Rabbi Gurtz, says, Rabbi, maybe you can knock some sense into my son over here. We have a great business to go into, he'll be comfortable, have a nice parnasa, and he wants to go learn. And we need someone to take it over. Talk to him about it, tell him to get his head, put his head on straight and try to, go and say yes to the business. Rabbi Gurtz says, lady, where is Mrs. Nyman? He says, you have the wrong man. I'm not going to tell him that. I think he's doing the right thing. You got the wrong person to do the job. 10 years later, I don't know exactly when it was, about 10 years later, my father got smicha, and they had a big, Chagas smicha dinner, and my grandmother came, and and Rabbi Gurtz was at the dais. He was one of the chashuv in the yeshiva. I don't know exactly what his official role, whatever. He was not in the yeshiva then, so whatever. But he was a chashuv musbach from David's time, with David's Talmud. So he was on the dais. So my grandmother walks up to the dais. My grandmother was a gavrin for a woman, but she was a gavrin. She was a tough lady. Okay, so she went up to the dais. I don't know who was there, but Rabbi Gurtz was there. She said to the person next, I don't know who it was, some other Rav in the yeshiva or some Rebbe, I don't know who it was, says, Rabbi, please do me a favor. Go over to that man, Rabbi Gurtz, and please kiss him for me. And thank him for not listening to me 10 years ago. Because she saw what it meant. She was always machshav Torah, but she wanted to have the business. The business, you have to have parnasa. But she saw how much my father accomplished. And they used to always say, and my grandparents used to always say, Torah is the best of service, the best business in the world. Doesn't mean to make the most money, but it was the best business, and she was ecstatic, and she was thankful to Rabbi Gurtz for not following her advice and not following her request and not acceding to it, and Baruch Hashem. Listen. I guess just to focus on both sides. So it's. I mentioned before about the goal, about the focus. I'm not sure exactly when it happened, when my father, became like that. But it goes back a long time ago, because the rest of the story, what I told you before about when he went to Chicago with his mother when he was 12, 13 years old. So what happened was my mother brought him to Skokie Yeshiva to, here's my son, take him. So the principal there gave him a little fahir, gave him bechina. And Lamaisa, he wasn't up to par. The Talmud Torah in Frankfurt was not good enough to get into Skokie Yeshiva. He can do basic stuff. He didn't. So, sorry, ma'am, I can't take him. He's not ready for the yeshiva yet. So what happened? So my grandmother, tell you who she was, says, Rabbi, I'm not leaving this office till either you accept him or you give us some eights of what to do to be able to get him. What do we do? I'm not going anyplace. My son has to go to yeshiva. What do we do? So he says, he tells her, listen, I can just advise you. Maybe go take your son, have him learn with a tutor for 6 months, and come back 6 months. Hopefully, by 6 months, he'll do better. He'll be on the level. So my great-grandfather, right, her father used to live, it was a big Talmud Chacham. He was a European. My grandmother brought him over right before the war, 1938, I think it was, 39, I don't know exactly when. And he was an older man, but he lived in Chicago. So she had my father stay by him, and he learned with him every single day. 6 months later, she brings back my father to the principal. Says, okay, Rabbi, you promised that you're in 6 months. Take him. So gave him fair, and Baruch Hashem did okay. But there was one problem. The problem was that there was no room in the dormitory. Okay, a small dormitory. There was no room. So what's he gonna do? So he had to go ahead and warned by my great grandfather Naftali, and he used to travel back and forth every day. There was one problem. Sometimes my father used to finish learning late at night, and he used to miss the last bus going back to my great grandfather's house. What did he do? So he went back to yeshiva. He used to sleep in the on the bench in the dining room. So the mashgiach, who used to come the next morning, every morning, wake up the boys, or he was the vekar, I guess, I don't know, the mashgiach, I don't know who was, some mashgiach there. So they told him that you better check out the dining room. And he found out after a while that every time he used to make a little detour before he went to the dormitory, he went to the dining room, because this guy Nyman was on the bench sleeping there half the time because he missed the bus. He was running too late. Now, he wasn't an old boy. He was like, I don't know, 12, 13, 14, I don't know how old he was. But he had that drive that he was driven. But I guess once he was towing the time of Torah, I guess, I don't know exactly when or what, but at that time, he developed a tremendous mud and he couldn't stop him from learning. So he missed the bus. He came too late. What are you going to do? But he didn't go kvetch and cry, Mommy, get on a cell phone, and and what am I going to do? I have no bed, whatever. He found a bench. They found the bench, stuff in the bench, right? Like, he's a story from Europe. That's what you hear all the time. He's a story from Europe. But that's what my father did for whatever. So he got to New York. He got the luxurious Torah V'Das and Chavetz Chaim in New York. One more thing I'll both say. See, I have more stuff. We're running at, right? 10:30 is Mar, right? Okay, so we'll finish up. But just also, there's one thing I always saw from my father. He was never, because of his drive, for Torah, for Yiddishkeit, for Godless, he was never embarrassed to do something which might not be so appropriate. It might be a little funny in people's eyes. What's this guy Nyman doing? What's he doing, My father was known that people used to laugh. Inside he used to laugh at all the things. He was into tape recorders, computers, cars. He has all these old John. I don't think my father ever drove one. Before he got married, because his parents were broke and comfortable, so he had a brand new car back in the 50s. He was a bacher. And he used to go on dates with a brand new car, but later on he got married, there was so he never drove a car which was probably less than 10 years old. I don't think so. I don't recall. They have all these junk cars. There's plenty of times we used to be stuck on the road in the highway from New York to Chicago on the side of the road because the car died on the highway in the Route 80 in Pennsylvania or the turnpike in Indiana and Ohio. They never had, so we used to go, so all these things. So people made fun. What are you with the tape recorders and with the mishigas and crazy stuff? But it was all, it helped him with his goal. His goal was to become a Rebbe, become a Marbish Torah, become a Talmud Chacham, know more Torahs. So we had to go. He was the first to get the tape recorder. Every time he used to go near, he used to have a session with Rav Moshe every week. I remember I was there a couple of times, not too often, but you used to see him with his little small table with Barsham back in the late, they already had cassette tapes back in the 60s, in the late 60s and 70s. He used to go there, he'd stand in the corner with Rav Moshe and Rav Booth Shlita and I forgot who else, and I think Rav Ida was there for a while. He used to have his recorder in hand, and he used to crowd around Rav Moshe. He used to take his microphone. You guys know what a microphone is, right? You don't have it, it's built into the cameras now, right? But you have a microphone. And put it, he stood in front of Moshe's face to make sure he tapes or records every word that he said. Because he wanted, and he chazered over. He's back in the car on the way back from the east side back to Queens. He used to listen to the tape, chazered over again and again. At the supper table, both, they used to sit with a tape recorder. He's talked to us plenty. So that would record if there's a break. He used to put it on and listen to it, and regular day supper, not on Shabbos, right? But during the week, they used to take the recorder and listen to it, he chazered. Why? People are like, the guy's nuts. What's he doing? He stoops the microphone from Rav Moshe's face. It doesn't make sense. What's he doing? It's embarrassing. He used to at a chasna, he used to always tell us, Hamidim, both I always have some shilas, some questions, some challenges you have. You put in a little note in your pocket, a little index card, write it down. Why? Go to a chasna, you have one of the gedolim, big Roshiva there. Ask him your five shilas. You have an opportunity. Don't waste the opportunity. Chaperayim, what are you doing? You're just sitting there and schmoozing and taking the sushi and the steaks and everything else over there. Come on, go to the Roshiva, spend time with him. He used to sit, even when he was a young person, he used to go, the Roshiva sit in the front seat by the chuppah, he's in the front seat, right? He used to go, sit down next to a Roshiva, it wasn't his seat to sit there, but sat down and asked him 10 questions. And we used to come back and say, I got 25 questions, today from Rutner, whatever it was, right? So that was his reason, that was his goal, that was his dedication to become a bigger gadol. But also it applies to everyone here. Everyone here, there's not one person who can't do it. Ishfi Madrigaso. But that's how, you start off. You start off not so, you're not the biggest, best guy in yeshiva, but you become, if you have that energy and you want and you have a desire, you have a tshuka, you want to learn more Torah, you want to become a gadol, you want to become a Torah, you have that goal in mind. The Yaakov Avinu was prepared for his Tzvius, as we mentioned before. can accomplish a Veltra Bosai. And just share with you, just to end off, we're out of time, but I always quote, there's a famous Chazal in this week's parasha, Vasli Migdash, right? V'shachanti b'socham, so the Medrash brings that Moshe Rabbeinu, they couldn't figure out how we can make a Migdash. They couldn't do it, it's paralyzed. How can I make one that which can house HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shechinah, that no one could do it? So we asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, could all Kai Yisrael together do it? What's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's answer? Not only that, but even each Isha Sheyidvenu Libo, one person, any one of the Kai Yisrael can do it. If he's in Venu Libo, if he cares, if he wants to accomplish a Bosai, I think the Mefarshim bring, because then HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps him. Everything is Siyat Deshmaya Bosai. You think you're stupid, you think you're not the smartest guy, you don't have the best memory, and you're tired, and you're Shvach, and you can't, Rabbi, I can't compare it to him, I can't compare it to him, what am I going to do? You work, you try, if you want to do it, Bosai, Chazal say that you can do it, because everything is Siyat. There's no such thing as Derech HaTeva. No such thing as Stama, it depends how smart I am. It's not relevant, Bosai. It might be relevant initially, you want to get depressed, and you're not motivated, that's fine. But if you want to accomplish, you want to improve yourself, you want to become a big Baal Halacha, big Baal Ion, big Baal Havana, whatever it might be, a Marbish Torah, and you work hard and you push yourself for it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides the Siyat HaShemaya, the help, and you'll be Zocha to become real B'nai Torah. Gedolim. Shkirah HaBosai.